Coming up on All About Android this week, we discuss the Galaxy S10e with David Ruddock from Android Police, filming The Tonight Show with the S10 Plus. Also, the Huawei P30 Pro was announced, the Xiaomi crazy fast battery charger. We'll talk about that. Firefox Lockbox, Opera's free VPN, and so much more. All About Android is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name and build your online brand with Hover. Visit hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. And by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter, where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Try it for free at ziprecruiter.com/android. And by Capterra, find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/AAA. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 413, recorded on Tuesday, March 26th, 2019, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
From a co-working space.
A little more of a dedicated, sound, baffled spot, minus crying babies.
Okay. Well, so, that makes sense. Yeah. We appreciate it. It is a pretty small space. You can flick the lights with just a simple... Yeah, I know. It's amazing. Suddenly you're silhouetted.
I'm disappointed you didn't bring your own acoustic foam.
Yes.
You're baffling. I was going to do that, but you know, I just have this light, so that's all I got.
That voice you heard, of course, is David Ruddock from Android Police. How are you doing tonight, David?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Thank
just
you.
Just fine and dandy. Good.
Absolutely.
It's always awesome to get you on. It is a bummer that we do not have Flo with us this evening. She has the night off.
I believe she's at a conference, as far as I could tell from her Instagram stories.
Oh,
I saw she
right.
attended a session on editing podcasts yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was funny because she's a podcaster.
Which I believe we call working.
Yeah, exactly, right?
So editing podcasts. So maybe we're going to get her to edit All About Android?
I didn't realize that you could be a podcaster and avoid editing. I clearly did something wrong for the past 15 years.
Yeah, I did something wrong for a long time too, and then somehow I got absolved of that duty here at Twit. And thank you, Victor, for making it so that I don't have to edit the video.
Also, we've been doing this for 15 years.
Yeah, that's true. don't put it in those terms.
I've been podcasting longer than I went to school.
Oh, so you're
That's about right. Maybe about the same time. It's close. Let's just say that.
What is the saying that they say? After X amount of hours, you're a professional when you do something X thousands of times.
Yeah, that's like the Malcolm Gladwell, the 10,000 hours rule, right?
10,000 hours. Have you done 10,000 hours of podcasting?
I think we tried to calculate it once, and I think like I'm at like 4,000. I really think like 10,
so we're 10, still amateurs.
Hours, yeah, 10,000 hours is a lot.
Have you done 10,000 hours worth of writing for Android Police, David?
I've written 5,000 blog posts, I think.
Holy cow. So okay,
maybe I might be making that up.
All right, and some of those are going to take you 30 minutes. Some of those are going to take you hours, right?
Right. Yeah, hours, definitely. That happens. I think
nice chunky review is going to take you hours to write, right?
I'm nowhere near 1,000, I'm only 3,200. I completely made that figure up.
Okay.
So, yeah, I guess, you know, I don't know.
Well, Jason, to give it in context, you say each episode of All About Android is about 2 hours, let's say, right? And we've done 413. So we've only done 826 hours of the show.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dang.
Think about that.
Okay. Only 826 hours. Yeah. Patrick, of course, this is his cue. He's starting to throw the stats in the chat room. 26 days, 16 hours, 10 minutes, and 22 seconds posted. Average episode length, 1 hour, 33 minutes, 14 seconds. Hey, hour and a half is like what we shoot for. So that's pretty awesome.
It is. That's great.
Considering some of them go way longer. We have a ways to go, apparently. All right. That's fun.
Well,
Math is fun.
Let's get started then.
All right, let's do it. We don't have the news bumper, although if we did, what were you going to say, Victor?
Oh, something about like David can't put Android news in a drawer.
Don't you put know, Android news in the corner.
In the drawer. Like, because he said that he put the S10 made him put his Pixel 3 in the drawer.
Oh.
Hold on, let me shut the drawer for effect.
Yes.
There you go.
It is.
Okay, I think I heard it. all right, let's get into hardware. We'll talk about what you're talking about. It's too bad that the hardware bumper doesn't have old timey voice as part of it. There's no reason why.
Why don't they all have old timey voice? I think that's a great idea.
It's true.
Maybe we need a T-Pain headset for that.
Would you wear the T-Pain headset and just bark anything you want in like autocorrect?
I'd wear it the whole day.
All right, good. Good, then I think we have to do that. Victor in T-Pain voice, that's what I have to see in my life. So, David, we need to talk. And it's a good talk. It's not a bad talk. I've been using the S10. I'm going to actually be recording my review for Hands On Tech here on the Twit Network. I think it's going to post later this week, but I record my review tomorrow. This is the middle-of-the-road S10. Although middle of the road makes it sound like it's like inferior, it's actually really great. You posted a review just last week of the S10e, which is like the, I don't know, does the E stand for entry level as far as the S10s are concerned? What did you think about the phone?
Exceptionally economy efficient. I don't really know what it stands for. Also, I hope you call Hands On Tech hot. Because that's great. Fantastic. I'm so glad to know that.
Absolutely. twit.tv/HOT will take you to Hands On Tech. It was just one of those weird, weird things that came together and it made a whole lot of sense.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, isn't that strange? So the S10e, you made the claim that this, I mean, it's right there in the headline, the best Android phone for the money and for most people. That's a lot to say about a phone that I think Samsung in the event really kind of downplayed a little bit compared to what we're used to, which is here's the S10 Plus, the biggest, baddest, most advanced phone we have at this very moment in time. Obviously, this is a little bit less spec'd in certain areas, but what makes you say that this is the best phone for its money, class?
Well, I think you're right that the laser and fog show had really died down by the time Samsung got to the S10e, but I do think it was the encore performance that everybody wanted, which is just all the Samsung you know and love, but in a more approachable and kind of, I would say, almost nostalgic package. You know, back when Samsung phones cost like, you know, 700-ish bucks, and that was the best Samsung phone you could buy.
Yeah.
So what's, you know, one of the kind of fun things that I did to like kind of benchmark the S10e where it sits historically in Samsung's larger lineup. You probably wouldn't believe this, but the S10e is basically the same size, thickness, and weight as a Galaxy S5. It's basically the same phone as a physical object. It's slightly wider, I think. And it's just a tear bigger than a Galaxy S4, and these are pretty old phones.
Yeah.
So this is a form factor that I think people were pretty happy with in the S4 and S5. The S5 in particular was like Samsung's culmination of their plastic phone series. Mm-hmm. It was the Band-Aid one, if you need to remember. Yes. It had the Band-Aid texture on the back.
Thank you. Yeah, that brings it back.
That was the S5. And I think people really liked that. And I thought a lot of people felt that's the right size phone for me. You know, it's not iPhone SE tiny, but it's not huge. But that said, this packs a way bigger battery and a way bigger screen in terms of actual like screen area. And obviously, it's a completely modern phone. And the things you give up for the S10e are really obvious and should be clear to most people. You give up the in-display fingerprint scanner, and it's a smaller battery. That's really it. The rear-facing camera stuff, like you don't get a telephoto lens, you don't want it anyway. Samsung's telephoto lens sucks. And the wide-angle camera is the one you want, and the S10e has that. That is the secondary camera of use. The S10 Plus's second front-facing camera doesn't do anything. You can't actually take pictures with it. It's just for portrait effect stuff. So you're not losing anything with that. You still get all the portrait effect modes. They're just not using two cameras. And like if somebody tries to tell you, oh, it's only got a 1080p screen, you're not going to notice. The pixels per inch on the S10e it's too dense for you to even tell. And also the S10 and S10 Plus ship running 1080p out of the box. You have to manually switch them to quad HD if you want to use it. So I think the one drawback to the S10e, if you really want long battery life, this phone will let you down. That said, the battery life is not bad. The battery life's probably a good 20, maybe 30% better than the small Pixel 3. So it's still pretty good. It's just that the S10 Plus like has such a huge battery this year that it's 4,100 milliamp hours in the S10 Plus. That phone goes and goes and goes and goes and goes. I don't know about the regular S10, but it's a much smaller battery than that. I believe 3,400 milliamp hours. Mm-hmm. And the S10e is 3,100, I think. So it doesn't last as long, but you get everything else basically. And I think for most people, that's why it makes the most sense.
And so, I'm sorry, Ron, go.
I was just gonna say, I think that's a compelling argument. But David, you say that, you know, it's the best Android phone for the money and for most people. Does most people equate to a $700 phone? Like that's where I get hung up. Is it still a $700 phone? And so if you're going to spend $200 or $300 more, you get a better battery, you get you get all those things that you're saying that are taking it away, that take away from it.
No, I think you're right there. I think if you want to spend $1,000 on a phone, the S10 Plus is perfectly defensible, and you get that huge battery life boost and a much bigger screen. So if you want those things, yeah, I definitely say the S10 Plus, totally worth it if those are big value props, like value adds for you. I would say the regular S10 is the one that's kind of in no man's land. I don't see any reason to recommend it. The S10e, you should get. The S10 Plus, you should get. They serve two different audiences. The regular S10, I don't know who that serves. I've seen people buying it, but I'm not sure who that's for.
I think it serves people who want more than the S10e, but don't want the real estate of the S10 Plus, right? They don't want the biggest phone, you know?
Right, and I think to speak to your point, David, like the S10, like I've been using it for the past week and a half almost, and I actually really like it a lot, but I haven't used the S10e to compare it to know, well, maybe that's good enough. And maybe some of these, you know, some of the like the size improvement, that's going to be highly personal, whether someone wants a slightly larger phone. The in-display fingerprint sensor, I've been really like kind of disappointed with for the most part. It's just not nearly as accurate as I want it to be. It takes me two or three tries all the time. So having the hardware fingerprint sensor in the side of the S10e, in my mind, strangely, kind of seems like a benefit over what you get in the S10. I think people, there's a perception of the fact that because this sits in the middle and it's better than the air quotes budget S10, that's it, but not nearly as ginormous as the S10 Plus. That's where the S10 falls. That's where people decide to go with the S10. But
no, you're right about that, and the way people think about it, especially Samsung phones. The thing is, they're all wrong. So the S10.
This is why we bring you on, David.
Is bar none the reason to get it, because the fingerprint scanner actually works.
Yeah.
So that is really the I don't like to use this word, the trump card for the S10e. Is definitely that fingerprint scanner. It is so much better to use. As long as you're using your phone with your right hand unlocked, it's very easy, very fast, very reliable. And that is, aside from the battery life, like there is not a lot that makes you want to go back to the S10 Plus. Bigger screen and the battery life are the really only the real reasons. And I loathe the fingerprint scanner on the S10 Plus. It's just bad. And I think you accept that as part of the experience of owning the S10 or S10 Plus. But the S10e, no compromises. The fingerprint scanner works great. And it's exactly where you expect it to be every time you touch it.
And you don't miss the dual front-facing cameras that you don't have on the E or the regular?
No, it doesn't do anything. So if you're doing like portrait effect shots, the background blurring, that's what the second one's for. It does not do anything photographically. It is 100% for post-processing for those portrait effect shots. So I really don't think it does anything. You still have the wide angle quote mode on the S10e and S10 on the front-facing camera.
Yep, and they work well. Yeah, I mean, I suppose you have to ask yourself, how important is that bokeh effect to you? And I mean,
you still get to use
you
it.
You still
though.
Get to it's use it. That's the thing. Yes, exactly. It's still there. It's just, do you want it to be a little bit better or there? And I would say probably most people would not care that much.
Yeah.
That's one of those features that you use sometimes, not always. Maybe you don't even think about it at all.
If I may briefly just switch to the S10 Plus, which because my title of that review got so many people to click on it. Sorry. I love the S10 Plus. It's the phone I want to use every day. The battery life is exceptional. The screen is so big. It's so pretty. Everything about it except the in-screen fingerprint scanner. And then there's one little thing that does not affect everybody, but it affects me very badly. The Edge cell service on it is not good. I miss half of my phone calls and text messages on this phone in my apartment. It's really bad. I had to stop using it. It got to the point where I'm like, I actually need to be able to get phone calls. Don't have that problem on the S10e.
Interesting.
So there's something really weird going on. It does not affect everybody, to be clear about this. I'm on AT&T, and in my area, it's band 12 LTE, and I had the same problem on T-Mobile and AT&T. Just terrible band 12 reception. I know Samsung's planning to release a patch specifically for Sprint phones because Sprint customers have been having a terrible time on the S10 Plus 2 in certain edge case scenarios. I always have to kind of
course,
parentheses that. But if you're in an area with poor AT&T or T-Mobile reception, I don't know if I'd recommend the S10 Plus very much.
Interesting. And this is a problem that Samsung knows about and like you said, is actively like planning on rolling out a patch, right?
Sprint, they're aware of it. Okay. AT&T and T-Mobile, I don't know what they're aware of. And I did side-by-side testing, measuring reception and everything. The S10 Plus gets way worse signal for me than the S10e or my Pixel 3 XL.
Interesting. So it went into your drawer and then it came back out, your Pixel.
No, I've just been using the S10e.
Oh, okay. Now you're on the S10. Hey, and I mean, that speaks volumes about the capability of what many people would largely throw away immediately for the fact that, oh, well, it's the lowest price of the flagship, so of course I don't want it. You're happy to use that in its place.
Yeah.
There we go. That
aside
says
from
something.
Battery life is whatever, but otherwise it's fantastic.
Interesting. All right. Cool. Well, obviously people can dive deep into your reviews of the S10e and the S10 Plus by going to androidpolice.com. Search for David's reviews there. They're easy to find. Much of tonight's rundown, by the way, is filled with Android Police stories. So if you can't find them on the site, you can always go to twit.tv/AAA where the show notes for tonight's episodes are and link to it directly.
Hey Jason, this is what we call in the comic book world a crossover. This is the All About Android Police crossover event.
All About Android Police.
There it is.
There we go.
Hey, I'm gonna actually trademark that. Just be like that.
No, too late. It's the title.
I registered the domain on Hover. Already, so there you go.
Too late. It's the title. I win. Okay, so this whole first block, by the way, is all Samsung. So those people who say that we either love or we hate equally Samsung because we either give them too much press or not enough time on the show, here you go. I don't know what that leads you with. But last night's Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon was a little different, apparently. It was shot entirely with the Galaxy S10 Plus. So, and, you know, Jimmy Fallon says, you know, I had this idea to do the show with just the Galaxy S10 Plus, and
it was the strangest thing. The sales guys came into my office and said,
and then Samsung said they were interested, and I said, okay. So I don't know whose idea it actually was. Jimmy kind of makes it seem like it was his idea, and who knows? Maybe it was. He's kind of interested in technology, I think. I don't know. I don't watch his show. But anyways, things look, I would say, pretty good, especially considering much of the show clips that I've seen were shot outside. You have to imagine, well, you have to assume lots of light, you know, full camera crew, even though they are using these S10 Pluses to shoot it. So if you go to the next clip, it's actually an interview with Jimmy and Conor McGregor, UFC, who I think just announced his retirement. Anyways, in a bar. So these are not the easiest lighting situations, except when you realize that there is probably a big lighting crew following them around. But David, you had mentioned in your S10 Plus review, you called out the S10's low light performance. Does this pair, like, what do you think about what you see here compared to kind of what you saw with your time with the phone?
Well, I think it's a, like you said, there is a lot of professional lighting going on here, which just makes it impossible to compare. And I also think, so just watching this clip, for example, what we're seeing here, the phone staying in a very stationary position. And also, I do wonder if there's somehow exposure locking it. Because the problem with smartphones that you always see in video is the exposure compensation kind of, it tends to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth as the camera moves. I'm sure a professional lighting crew can offset that by keeping the subject lit pretty constantly. So I don't think this is really all that impressive in any way, especially given what I've seen from the still photo performance for low light, which has just been very middle of the road.
However,
this definitely
falls in the aspiration category for those burgeoning wannabe filmmakers who think they can make a movie with their phone. I think the best thing you can invest in addition to a great lighting package like we see here, but one of those smartphone gimbal handle combinations.
Yeah.
Because that's clearly what they're using. They're using a balanced gimbal to track Jimmy as he walked and stuff like that. You do that with your hand and you're going to shake and the camera will not stay steady. They've got that lockdown on a rig to keep that great steady like TV quality shot because they're professionals. They know what they're doing.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And so much of the kind of the stuff that breaks up in video shot on smartphones is from those miniature movements that happen. Locking it down, having a super still shot just makes the encoding better. You know, it improves everything across the board.
Some of those gimbal handles are amazing. Have you seen those? They're like defy gravity. Like you can hold the handle and go left and right and all that stuff, and the camera and the phone just stays in the middle of it. It's amazing.
It's like holding a chicken.
If you've ever put your smartphone in the mouth of a chicken and tried to walk around with a chicken, it's not easy. This is probably the closest thing you could get to holding a chicken with your smartphone.
Is that Samsung's new tagline? Samsung S10? It's like holding a chicken?
Our optical image stabilization is so good, it's basically a chicken.
It really should be if it's not. See, we're giving you lots of marketing ideas here, Samsung. Also, just real quick before we move on, the S10 5G is apparently now set to release on April 5th in South Korea. In the U.S., sometime in April, as an exclusive to Verizon, which I think we knew already. Verizon 5G network launches in April on April 11th. I'd be really surprised if they don't release this timed with it in some way, shape, or form. But there is no price that I've seen yet. So
I want this phone. I do want it. It has a massive battery and it has like 3D sensors for the front and rear cameras. So I'm thinking it's going to have like proper secure face authentication.
That'll be interesting. What is the battery size on this? Is it like 5,000?
Yeah, I want to say it's like, I forget, maybe 4,700, something like that. I may be making that up.
Yeah. No, it is more. I'm watching Victor surf the web right now.
It's also bigger than a Galaxy Note 9. Oh, so it's a real, we would say at Android Police, a chonker of a phone.
A chonker. The Samsung chonker. Galaxy chonker.
I would be pro that name.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting marketing direction for Samsung to take. Well, speaking of interesting marketing directions.
Yes. Good segue.
So David, I'm dying to know, where do you stand on the foldable phone revolution? Are you pro or con the foldable phone future that we have in front of us?
Personally, I can't wait to get these foldable phones and then turn off the screen and then make a GIF of the crease folding and unfolding over and over.
Oh yeah.
That's what we're looking at here. As we've looked at these foldable phones, we've wondered how much folding can you do before that screen starts to see a crease or some physical representation of it. And a hands-on video of the Galaxy Fold hit YouTube, and we should just watch it, and we can answer that question now. Do you see a visible crease or not?
You can see it in the screenshot right there.
I know.
I mean, it's just.
But we see one, and look at that in the angle. You can actually see the fold. That crease doesn't bode well for the foldable revolution. A lot of unanswered questions with this video, though. You know, mainly how many times has this phone been folded to reveal that crease? You know, like how many times does it take for that to happen? And I mean, and the question that's on all of our minds, if you use this phone for a year, what does your phone look like after a year plus of use? Do you get that, you know, does it start to crack a little? Does it start you know, it's got
to. Oh, I would live for the noises. Yeah.
Oh man. So, listen, I'm very pro the foldable phone future. I do think the future is both foldable and bezel-less, but this is a real problem and something that we're going to have to worry about on April 26th when the Galaxy Fold comes out. And if you've got $1,980, you can find out for yourself how quickly that crease falls into place.
Wow. Also, this guy straight up showed his engineering watermark on the back of the phone. And he's not getting any more phones.
No, yeah, it does not care. Really wanted that fold to be seen by everybody. To explain it for audio listeners, it really looks like you took a piece of paper, you folded, and you like creased the fold, and then you flattened it and tried to like smooth it out. And you know, on paper, like when you try and smooth it out, you can never totally get rid of that bend, no matter how much you crease it with your fingernail and stuff.
Or even with plastic.
Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, that's the problem. These are plastic screens. They are not glass.
You're up against like the laws of physics here and like matter and like how things work.
Yeah.
And that when you fold something like that, you're moving its atoms around in a way that can never be reset. And so you'll always have a physical effect of the fold, which is unfortunate.
Now, in the chat room, Cousin Uja is saying fold with a hinge and two side by side screens would be better. I would beg to differ. I have used that phone. It was the Sony Tablet P, and it was horrible having that hinge in the middle.
I was going to say the T axon N.
Oh, right. Okay. That's right.
Oh, that was really bad too. That was, trust me, you don't want it.
Yeah, you don't want that seam there. It's not better than the crease.
Hinge is not a solution. Hinge does not solve it.
Yeah, it's not better than the crease. But
what you actually need is some sort of, and now I'm getting into like future tech here, but you need some sort of liquid based fluid, you know, kind of, you know, not because plastic bends and has that fold, and glass obviously can't bend unless it's extremely, extremely hot, and then you can't hold the phone.
Yeah.
But if there's some sort of material that allows that embraces the bend and balances it and is able to display, generate the light on the display, that's going to be the true future of it.
Mm. Okay, I don't want to be the correction police, but Corning has demonstrated a glass material that does this. So I think it was The Verge that got the most recent exclusive on this? I think it was. Corning is now saying they can bend glass to a radius of 5 millimeters repeatedly. And this glass keep doing that. But the CEO of Corning said it was Wired. The CEO of Corning said, "It's coming in the next few years."
That's a good answer.
It was very much like, we'll see. We'll see what happens. And he's also like, you know, there are big questions about durability. And it's like, yes, that's a very big question.
That's
actually
always the question when you're talking about something like this.
So, like, they can do it in a lab under controlled conditions with no, like, you know, having to deal with, like, dropping it or making a lot of it. It can be done. So we'll see. I don't think it's impossible.
But that's how progress starts. You start somewhere, you know?
That's true.
Yeah.
We've started.
So it's interesting.
We started with the Samsung Galaxy crease, and soon it's going to be the Samsung Galaxy Fold.
And personally, what I think happened was that basically, like, all these phone manufacturers really wanted the flexible stuff for years now. And Corning's like, just a little bit longer, just a little bit longer, guys, just a little bit longer. And like, nah, just kidding. It's going to be a few years. and then they're like, all right, screw it. We got to use plastic.
We got to go with something. We have to launch, you guys. We've waited too long. Yeah. We've been promising it for literally years. All right, that was our Samsung block. We've got more hardware to come after this short break. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Hover. If you're looking to get a new, you know, you're building an online brand, maybe it's a personal website, maybe it's a business that you're starting, you need to buy a domain name. Domain name is probably one of the most important first things that you do when you plan on launching a business online. So you got to lock that down. You can lock it into your passion. It's just a big step when you actually take that leap and buy that. It almost makes things seem just a little bit realer to you. Keeping your domain name separate from hosting gives you the flexibility to choose the right platform for your business, because no one wants to be stuck with a solution that doesn't meet their needs. And who doesn't need a domain name nowadays? Everybody needs one for something. Hover has over 400 domain extensions to choose from, so your options feel limitless. So many options now. .me is just one of many, and obviously .me, you know, it's perfect for something like a personal portfolio. If you're building a website to highlight you for other people, you want a single place for people to go to find out more information about you, or you want to host your CV, your resume online. It's a great way to stand out from the generic .com or .net websites that are floating around that everybody's used to seeing. .me is a great way also to stand out to potential employers. Like I said, if you want to host your resume there, you can showcase what you're all about easily that way. Hover offers the best-in-class customer support team and no upsells. A clean and simple user experience and interface, personalized email that matches your domain. That's going to further support your online identity. And the Hover Connect feature allows you to connect your domain name to many website builders with a few simple clicks. And it really is easy. You're not going to get those upsells and everything. I've got a number of domains through Hover. Just a wonderful experience. Buying them, renewing every year is super simple. Customer service when you need it, clean user interface. They really kind of have designed it so that they've removed a lot of the barriers that you can run into when you're trying to buy a URL, buy a domain for yourself. So become your own best advocate. The .me domains are on sale for this month at Hover for $9.99. And if you've never used Hover before, you can get an additional 10% off any of the domain extensions offered. Visit hover.com/twit to check out their deals. It's time to get your portfolio website up and running. That's hover.com/twit. And we thank Hover for their support. All right. So, Ron, you got the next piece of hardware that has nothing to do with Samsung.
Nothing to do with Samsung. And all about Huawei. Our good friends at Huawei, they went to Paris for an event to align with their new P30 and P30 Pro. And I wonder if they chose Paris for the alliteration of the P30 and P30 Pro in Paris.
And the Periscope. And the Periscope.
Oh, wow. Triple alliteration.
Yeah. And they're there to rewrite the rules of photography, which also starts with a P.
Photography.
So the new P30 and the P30 Pro, you got three rear cameras on the P30 and four on the P30 Pro. Because why stop at three when you've got a Pro phone? Put on a fourth camera. Madness. Just do it.
Yeah.
You know, just we're in the age of excess with Huawei.
Yeah.
All right. So you got a 10x hybrid lossless zoom, which is 5x optical plus software tricks, up to 50x digital zoom. They're using the Sony lens for the main sensor, and the I can never pronounce Leica.
I
want to say Leica. Leica.
Leica just is wrong, so don't do Leica.
Yeah. So Sony main sensors, the Leica lenses, and OIS. You got night mode on the P30 Pro using an RYYB Super Spectrum, which uses yellow subpixels instead of green for 40% more in low light situations. And the big question there is, how does it perform compared to the Google Pixel 3 night mode, which is mind blowing. And it's also got dual view video for recording video from the main and telephoto sensor simultaneously for varied perspectives. And it's got AR, HDR plus. So David, what do you make of these? Did they reinvent photography on the phone?
Well, no, but what I like about what Huawei's doing is they are taking an approach that is pretty much opposite of Google's, which I find very fascinating, because Huawei's essentially saying, let's throw all the hardware we can at it and what's possible in the packaging. Huawei's approaching it not from a question of just processing. And Huawei does a very good job with that, by the way. Huawei is definitely second to Google in terms of overall photo processing prowess. They're getting very good at this. But Huawei is saying, well, what if we take that general capability and then apply it to a lens system where we've just got all these different lenses and you can do whatever you want with them? And I think that makes and made the Mate 20 Pro a more flexible smartphone camera than the Pixel 3 XL last year, even if the end results weren't always as good. So I think it honestly, Huawei is saying, hey, to people who like photography, what do you care about more? Do you care about having that flexibility of a versatile multi-lens system, or do you just care about the raw image at the end of the day and you deal with the perspective? And I think Huawei's approach is just as valid as Google's. And I really like to see that because I think it's challenging everybody. So I think Samsung is being pulled in one direction by Huawei and in Google by and another by Google. And I think the same goes for all these camera manufacturers. So I love what Huawei is doing. And I think the P30, even if they're not the first to talk about using a periscope lens, I think they're the first to put in the phone that's going to matter. And I think other companies are going to follow.
Interesting. And I mean, that periscope system is, to me anyways, I don't know if, like you're saying, you've seen it in other phones. What other phones did it appear in before this one? Because that seems like a really great way to do this, right? Like, we want true optical extension on our cameras so that we can get an actual optical zoom, but we don't want necessarily a mechanical zoom that actually comes out from the phone. Although we've got cameras protruding from the top, so maybe we do want that. I don't know. But but the periscope setup seems like a really great way to do that within the design of the phone and keeping it super compact. So I'd love to see the results of that, see how that optical zoom actually looks, because I think having an optical zoom in a smartphone camera is really valuable. Like, that's one of the features that I look for. Because nothing's worse than digital zoom. Digital zoom just always sucks.
Yeah, and we're seeing. I mean, you know, Google's trying to make a lot of advancements with their digital zoom on the Pixel 3. That was a big part of the announcement, that they're using all their, you know, their processing power and using, you know, all that stuff to make it. But it still looks digital zoomed. Even with all that, you still can tell. Right. This is one of those things where nothing really beats optical zoom. So really, you need to push the limits of what you can do with optical zoom. And it looks like that's what they're doing. And I agree with you. I mean, digital zoom is nice. 50x on digital is nice. But optical is always, you know, I whatever phone I'm on, I always try to stick. I try to avoid the digital zoom, no matter how good it is. And I'm on the OnePlus 6T and that camera is great. But I avoid the digital zoom.
Mm-hmm. So I'd say a little inside baseball on the optical zoom thing. So Huawei is the first to put in a commercial smartphone. Oppo demoed it at MWC and hinted at it last year as well in a phone. And then actually last year, Samsung bought the company that does this technology. It's an Israeli company. I forget their name. But they came up with this telescopic system that can fit inside a smartphone. And as was pointed out to me when we posted about this, a bunch of photography nerds got in on the conversation. And they're like, excuse me, you'll find that certain small portable cameras were using similar telescoping technology in the early 2000s. So this concept isn't novel. Granted, packaging in the smartphone is still pretty new. So I think we'll see them from Huawei. We'll see them from Oppo and thus OnePlus and Vivo.
Right.
And we'll also see it from Samsung soon, too. So I think they're all going to get on this periscoping thing.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's a packaging expense. It does make a lot of sense, but like we saw, I think Huawei did like a skeletal cutaway. We're like, oh yeah, it has to go down like a couple centimeters for this to work. So it actually does cost some serious space in the phone.
Yeah, right. That makes a lot of sense too. You got to make the room for that, and at the cost of what else that people also find to be priorities. So the company that you're talking about that Samsung acquired, this happened just in January. It's the mobile camera pioneer. Is it acquired? No, sorry. Reveals Samsung Core Photonics.
There you go. Core Photonics. Yes.
There we go. Sorry. I misread that. All right. Apparently for the sum of around $155 million. So, and that report of that acquisition is just January. So one could, you know, assume or expect that we might see these filtering into the phone sometime in the next couple of years. I don't know how long it takes to take this kind of technology and loop it in and make it work on the next generation.
I would guess Galaxy Note 10, personally.
You think they could turn it around that fast on the Note 10?
Yes, I think they will. I honestly do.
Samsung's good at like staging their big features, right? So then the Note 10 adds, you know, takes everything that you thought was wowy about the S10 and adds its own extra thing, which could be this periscope thing. And then the S11 comes out next year that adds this other thing. And they stage things really well as far as that's concerned.
Can we go back to that video, that Huawei video, Victor, and go back to the guy zooming in on the moon?
You can actually see the flag.
No, you can't, Jason. It was a hoax. It doesn't wave.
This got me. This is like out of a science fiction movie. He reaches out and grabs the moon and brings it closer. He's not holding a phone in that shot, by the way. That guy's just a supervillain.
Did that just happen?
Look at that. Look.
I've never seen anything so crazy.
And thus the gravity of the Earth is thrown off because the moon now is closer, 50 times closer.
Yes. It's about time. The Pixel Slate line. Oh, sorry.
I love those marketing videos.
Yes.
I love
them. Well, yeah. You know, did it give you a good feeling? Because that's what it's all about. Turn off the commercial, buy the phone.
I watched that commercial and they explain the different technologies that they're doing with this phone, with these cameras. I mean, that got the idea of the zoom across.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that one that broke out all the layers and the subject with the background and all that sort of stuff. It gives you a sense of what that, you know, what the depth kind of effect is. Of course, the bokeh, you know, the blurring, the portrait mode that everybody loves now. But yeah, I thought that actually marketing video was effective in explaining what the Periscope phone can do.
Well, it's your next phone, so I'm happy you enjoy it. We'll see. The Pixel Slate lineup was announced initially to include, I'm using a Pixel Slate, by the way, but not the Celeron version, which was an Intel Celeron version, was at the announcement. It was the lowest cost version of the Slate at $599 at launch. Apparently, they were only available for a short time, and then they've been out of stock. Maybe because they've been wildly successful and they can hardly keep them in stock. 9to5 Google has apparently been tracking this availability for months, and it's always out of stock. David, will it ever come back, or is there a Slate conspiracy, a Celeron conspiracy going on?
Okay, so the timeline on this is as follows. Google announced Pixel Slate, you know, at its October event, and then in November, pre-sales went up. So right around the time pre-sales went up, Marques Brownlee released his video review of the Pixel Slate, and he got his hands on the Celeron version. I don't know if he bought it. I don't know if Google actually gave him one. I asked Google for one, and they're like, "Well, we don't have any of those." So either way, he got one. Well, Marques Brownlee, who is really great at what he does, that said, is known for probably being like, you know, I wouldn't say takes it easy on products as much as like he tries to understand what they're for, and he tries to understand the audience, and he tries to understand the motivation behind the product before he really passes final judgment. He did not like the Celeron Pixel Slate at all. He basically just said, do not buy this. And I might have used stronger language in my post, but at that point, very shortly after, Celeron Pixel Slate can no longer be ordered. Hmm. We're talking within a couple of days, probably, and it never came back. And I can say, you know, knowing 9to5 Google and knowing the way we do things, we would know if the Celeron Pixel Slate was available for pre-order again or for ordering again. It never was. And the only place you could buy them was from the Google store. And so Google launched this tablet as starting at $600. Well, the $600 model is the Celeron model. The $700 model is the Celeron model. The $800 model is the M3 model. Mm-hmm. The M3 model is the cheapest Pixel Slate you've been able to buy since maybe a day after launch.
Yeah.
And Celeron models never came back. And we asked Google about this. 9to5 Google asked about it. 9to5 Google got a comment basically saying, oh, yeah, some models are out of stock. And we then emailed Google and we're like, hey, we see you guys gave this comment to 9to5 Google. I think that's kind of garbage. How about you give us an actual comment? And I have not heard back. So,
when you position it that way, I mean, I don't understand.
I didn't use the word actual garbage as much as said, I don't believe this is a sufficient comment given Google launched this product at the starting price point of $600 and has failed to deliver on that promise. Which is true. They have failed to deliver on that promise.
That's true, yeah.
The issue with Celeron models, performance is apparently just terrible. And if you know anything about processors, and the way Intel brands things. M3 i5 i7, and this is getting real nerdy, I'm sorry, but these three processors, the way Intel brands them, these ultra portables, they're all, you know, like the fanless processors, they're all basically equivalent. Actually, most people don't understand that M3 and i5 are basically the same chip. They cost basically the same amount of money from Intel. The i7 is a fair bit more expensive, but it's actually still the same basic chip, just clock speed differences. The Celeron, though, is a couple hundred bucks cheaper than the M3 or i5. And you lose basically Intel's entire basket of goodies of major tech advances in mobile processors when you choose that. You lose hyper-threading, you lose Turbo Boost CPU, and you take half the CPU cache. So it's a full, like, just it's an entire product tier down from these M3 and i5 processors. And the Pixel Slate is super high resolution. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this processor can handle it. And I think what Google discovered was this Marques Brownlee video came out, and they're like, the management's like, oh no, we cannot sell a product that is getting this kind of critical acceptance from a guy who we expect relatively tempered critical acceptance from. And I think they just pulled them from sale. I think they just basically have indefinitely shelved the product until they can get it running in a way they like. And honestly, there's no reason to think anything other than that at this point.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll get it running the way they want. Maybe they won't.
And you wouldn't blame them for that either. I suppose the problem is, you know, that they should probably be a little bit, you know, they should be more upfront about it. But when you really look at, like, when your price, you know, differential is from $600 into the thousands for a Chromebook, which already people have a really hard time understanding why you would spend $1,000 on a Chromebook. So then you've got that family coming from Google, and the lowest price one is a turd. I think a lot of people who are thinking, I want to get a Chromebook, what should I get? Oh, I should get one from Google, but why would the hell would I spend $1,000 on it? I'll get the $600 one. That's still more expensive than a lot of the other Chromebooks out there. And then they end up with something that's completely horrible. Like, I could totally understand Google being like, you know what? We don't want that to be the first Chromebook from us that people get. They'll never buy anything from us again.
But to David's point, which, I mean, you know, friend of the show, Marques Brownlee, you know, shows, you know, the impact, like, people look to him and other folks, absolutely, like at Android Police and things like that. They you know, like, I don't purchase any electronics without, you know, I was looking for baby monitors the other night, and I was on Wirecutter, and I was on other places. You know, everybody now, this is a day and age of people looking for what are people saying about this piece of hardware before I buy it. And, you know, to David's point, if one of their biggest cheerleaders slams a product, that's a problem. And that's probably an indicator.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's another great example of that this year, actually. I don't know if you guys follow Arlo, the smart home company. They wanted to launch a 4K like home security outdoor camera. And initial reviews were pretty brutal. I don't think you can buy it yet. It's been a couple months. So the companies really are thinking about these things now. I think the Pixel Slate, Google didn't like the critical reception it got, even sending reviewers the $1,000 model. It was already probably not happy with that. Mm. And then seeing the response to the even, you know, less performant version, that had to probably hurt.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm using the M3 version. That's the one that I got here, and I'm very happy with it. I mean,
you're a big fan of it. I mean, you made me consider getting one.
I should preface. I'm happy to use the Slate, and I think I've said this on the show before, because it's Google's latest, you know, most recent version of its Chrome OS devices. Yep. I would probably still prefer to use the Pixelbook because that is the form factor.
It's better.
Yeah, that's the form factor that I actually need. I don't need a tablet, and I don't really care for the tablet implementation on here.
But, that said, you know, the screen is gorgeous. The screen is Slate. It's
absolutely
so good.
Absolutely is. And I've gotten really used to the keyboard. You know, it's not as good as the Pixelbook keyboard, but I use it regularly and I have no complaints. So
I gotta wonder if that's a combination of a gen, not to say you're old, Jason, but a generational thing. But we're a generation brought up on laptops, right? And there's a generation that's not. And then additionally, it just in terms of a pro level, like what our expectations are, I couldn't operate with a tablet or a tablet hybrid as my daily driver because the stuff I need to do, I need a laptop. And we've talked about this a lot, you know. But is there a whole nother generation that is ready to embrace a device like that?
I don't know if that's happening with the Slate is the problem.
No, I don't think anybody's embracing that on a broad level.
It's not being embraced very much.
Not at $600. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll tell you what I will embrace though. Crazy battery life. Every now and then, so a lot of you in the Element Android community, you love to tweet stories at us, and which is great. And Jason, I know you love it too, right? I mean, like when, I find out a lot of times I find out about this stuff not by going to Android Police and reading David's articles or other people's articles, but people tweeting the articles at me before I even get a chance to read them.
Right.
And this is one I got inundated with, and I literally saw it on Twitter, and I think I said out loud, "What?" And I looked at it. So Xiaomi getting really serious about battery charging, and like in a crazy way, they announced a 100 watt charger that charges supported phones insanely fast. There's something that they call Supercharge Turbo, and we've got the video here that shows side-by-side charging versus the Oppo 50-watt charger. And the Xiaomi 100-watt charger charges to 100% battery life in 17 minutes, filling a 4,000 milliamp battery. And the Oppo 50-watt charger only gets it to 65% in 17 minutes, filling a 3,700 milliamp battery. So, I mean, I was impressed with how fast batteries can charge these days. You know, after an hour or two, my phone's back at 100%. 17 minutes, like that's enough to charge in a subway ride, right, or a train ride with an outlet on the side of the, that's amazing. Right. But you got to wonder, A, how are they doing this, and what impact does it have on the battery? Like, does 100 watts charging that quickly hurt the battery in the long run? Will it degrade that battery over time? David, what did you think when you saw this for the first time? Did you believe it?
That's definitely my question. I definitely believe it. My question is definitely, what is the long-term impact on the battery specifically as relates to heat? Because as we know, lithium-ion batteries, when they get very hot, you're degrading their life cycle. So, maybe there's some mitigating steps they're taking, and I would not doubt if there are things we could be doing to cool batteries and phones better. Granted, they probably add thickness, but I think it's still pretty cool. 100 watt chargers in themselves aren't novel. That's what you use to charge a 15-inch MacBook. They definitely exist. Doing it for a phone battery though, talking about a dense amount of power in a very small amount of space. So heat's generated because that's physics or whatever.
And that heat's got to go somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I would be a little bit concerned about that. I know like OnePlus has said and Oppo and Vivo have all said, well, we offset some of that by putting some of the fast charging components in the cable itself. So that the battery's not absorbing as much of like the PMIC, like heat leach kind of stuff that's going on. But I don't know what Xiaomi's doing there.
Interesting stuff, but still, I'm all for it as long as it doesn't have a negative impact on the battery long term,
or burn your hand when you pick the phone.
Just as long as you don't die using
it. Yeah,
that's, or not die. I got an idea, phone manufacturer. Don't kill me with your phone.
Do that, and we'll have a long relationship. Victor wrote in. Sorry, not you, Victor. Different Victor.
By the way, for a moment, it would be amazing if Victor emailed in.
I was thinking the same thing. So,
okay.
Victor,
so
Victor, you can just ask us your questions. You don't have to email us. It's okay.
It's cool. It's like a fringe benefit of being involved with the show. Victor says, I am a longtime viewer and fan. I don't think I have ever yelled at the screen so loud in all the episodes. Wife probably thought I was going insane, as I did in episode 412. This is last week's episode. When Jason tried to use the power sharing on the S10. Do not move it, is what he kept yelling. Qi charging with any device takes 1 to 2 seconds to connect to each other. So by you moving it like a Ouija board, which I thought was pretty funny, you are preventing the devices from establishing a connection. Just flip the phone, place the watch in the middle of the device, and wait 1 to 2 seconds. Then voila, charging begins. With that said, I would not attempt a PowerShare charging of another cell phone. It is mostly for Samsung Buds or watches, really. I put this in here because you are not alone, Victor. Lots of people yelled at me and probably at the podcast while it was playing. So I have wireless PowerShare on. I'm going to do what you said. I'm going to just place it in the center and hope that it works. Okay, did you see it light up there? Because I didn't see it light up there.
It didn't light up.
All right, okay, so I'm going to go ahead and do it again. All right, did you see it light up there? All right, because I didn't see it light up there. All right, so my point is things don't always work the way you think they're going to work.
Also, also, the definition of it needs 1 to 2 seconds to connect to start charge. It's like then it's not ready for prime time.
I'm okay with that if it worked, but
if it would did it,
yeah, if it actually did it, but
does it ever light up? Does it?
Yes.
Do you have to hold it like you have to make it like push it next to each other because you're just placing it on top of it.
Right. Well, right? You know, everybody said you got to put it dead center. That's where the contact point is. Like I've done it that way and I've had it work. I've also done it that way and had it not work. I've moved it around like a Ouija board and sometimes it works. I move it around like a Ouija board and it doesn't work. So I don't know.
I think if it made like a kissing sound when they finally connected, right. that'd be nice. Good. I'd be
That would be perfect, actually. Well, I mean what it does is it gives you a little haptic kick, so that it's kind of like a phone kissing you. But sometimes you'll get that haptic kick and then it'll just go away and it's not actually charging. So anyways, whatever. There you go. Let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode, and then we will get into some app news. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. If you've hired, you know all about all these things. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to actually get that done. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Android. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. And that's not all that they do. They don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter actually scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and then spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective, in fact, that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate through the site within the first day. I've witnessed this firsthand. My wife used ZipRecruiter for a position in her business, and she had a couple of people already lined up for interviews within a day. It worked super well for her. She was very impressed. Right now, All About Android listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at our exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Android. You can show your support for this show and for ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Android to check out the service for yourself and see what it's all about. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Android. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. I know I'm still going to get emails from people like, no, you're supposed to drop it down a few centimeters. It's going to happen.
Did she say the incantation?
No, you're right. I didn't. Dang it. Samsung needs to put that in their review notes. It's time to jump into some app news.
Man, do we need to refresh the apps in that bumper, Jason?
It's always, this is the problem with putting logos in the bumper, man. Always, you always need to. Probably so. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's still cool. Anyway, so I'm going to tell you a story. I got a friend who is not an Android user. He's an iOS user, but he's a podcaster and works in media. And I get maybe like every week or so, he messages me asking about Google Podcasts. If it can do this, if it can do that, why doesn't it work better? When is it like he really wants this to change the game for podcasts, and it just hasn't been. And I finally got to tell him some good news recently because this recently came out that on the web, podcast.google.com is now available on the web. The Google Podcast app available for web access, kind of, sort of. So podcast.google.com only shows a link for installing on a phone, which has been out there for a while. But when you share a podcast, you get a google.com/podcast link for that episode. So if you change that link to podcast.google.com it actually pulls up a web interface of the Google Podcast app. You got listening, syncing, and episode browsing available through this workaround for now. And it's got similar UI elements to YouTube Music and Google Play Music. And it also syncs playback progress from Android and Google Home. But there's still no way to subscribe on the web yet. So once again, we are reminded that Google Podcasts as a platform for podcasting, and unfortunately, like you know, it's a flip of the coin with Google when they launch these things. They're either really committed and really do a great job of it, or kind of half-ass it. And in this particular case, I feel like Google Podcasts was, you know, all the bluster that Google can bring of the power of what they have and a promise to change the industry and not delivering on it at all. The Google Podcast app is still limited in what it can do. The lack of web interface is, you know, a hindrance to podcasters. And this is a good sign. But the fact that someone on Twitter had to figure it out and it's a hack to do it is not how you want to roll out a product or get people to use it, unfortunately.
Okay. But I have good Google Podcast news aside from this. And I don't know if you guys saw this.
Is this breaking news, David?
It did happen. We posted about it today. Somebody tipped it to us and some people discovered it. It's not one of these back end things.
That's good enough for us, David.
Yes.
And
I want pie. There we go. Sorry, all I had right. to get that. We hardly have any opportunities for our breaking news bumper. So
I enjoy that. I'm sad Flo isn't here because she wrote an editorial for AP calling this whole thing out. But so one of the big things that everybody, I think, thought about Google Podcasts initially was like, is Google just going to make it so you can just like search podcasts?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes. So they've started fully transcribing episodes. We discovered this on our own show. Google has begun doing AI audio transcriptions of podcasts that it's indexing. So like our last episode of the Android Police podcast, you can find the whole back end with the on Google with the entire transcript of the hour plus long episode as done by Google. So if you search for phrases within the episode, they show up in Google with a link to the episode.
This is totally breaking news. This is the best
That's
breaking news ever.
Breaking news.
Yeah.
So this is a soft launch as far as we can tell. It's not very clear how far it's rolling out. They don't seem to be going back to old episodes at this point in doing it. But as soon as Google launched podcasts, I was like, this is what they've got to do, right? Like they're going to make the media of audio searchable.
Yep.
And it's that definitely seems to be what's happening right now.
Wow.
All right, so I'm going to amend my complaint here because, you know, as we get – as you know, we're going to put Jason's watch on the back of the Samsung phone and do the Android Ouija board again. It seems like they're putting pieces in place without telling anybody, which feels – and I know it's early because it's March and Google I/O is in May, but could we be building up towards a big kind of refresh of Google Podcasts and a kind of positioning of the application in the marketplace at Google I/O? This is all speculation, but given how much attention to podcasts, thanks to Spotify and thanks to, you know, every couple of years saying podcasts are the next big thing, you know, is Google, you know, iterating in front of our eyes and then they're going to unveil a new version of the app that makes me shut up and dominates the industry.
I think it's entirely possible. And Jason, I do hear your watch vibrating.
Yeah, did you hear that? It was like it was kicking in there. It was working. It liked what Ron was saying. It was like, yeah, I'd charge to this. Cool. Yeah, we are – like I made that realization I think earlier today and tweeted it out. We're 6 weeks away. 6 weeks from Google I/O. So we are within the realm of, here's some setup.
We're in the rumors and speculation window for sure. So I'm officially going to say Google I/O will feature some focus on podcasts.
Yeah.
There you go.
That will be interesting. Firefox launched a new password solution that they call Firefox Lockbox. If you are a Firefox browser user on your Android device or just in general, you might want to listen up. Basically, if you use Firefox and you have passwords stored inside the browser, Lockbox will bring those passwords into the rest of the Android OS. So it's, it works with the autofill service. It's pretty simple at the moment. It is lockable with biometrics. So you can, you know, unlock or keep it all locked up with your fingerprint, that sort of thing. Passwords are, of course, encrypted, but you can't, it's not very flexible at this point. You can't add, edit, delete passwords, no password generation, none of those advanced, like LastPass has like a security breach kind of tool that will monitor the passwords that you have stored and match them up to known breaches, that sort of thing. None of that, but it is totally free. Firefox offers it for Firefox users. So if you happen to use the browser and you store your passwords in Firefox and you want to make those available to other apps and other sites on your Android device, this would be the way to do it. It's called Firefox Lockbox.
The Lockbox.
Lockbox.
Al Gore would be happy.
Yep.
There's a 20-year-old joke.
Oh.
All right.
It's okay. You're 20 years old. It's okay, Ron.
The fine vintage.
Yes. Oh, man. All right. And so for those of you looking for privacy or a free option around privacy, the fine folks at Opera and the Opera browser now have a free VPN service in the Android app for Opera. It's been beta testing in the app since last month. It's using 256-bit encryption and offers server location selection. Opera says that it does not log user activity. And they also say that they monetize in other ways unrelated to the VPN, so they will not ever monetize this feature. And it's important to know privacy professionals often recommend avoiding VPNs, free VPN services, because those free VPN services are free because they've been caught selling customer data. And a disturbing study by Metric Labs showed that half of the top free VPN apps they looked at were owned or based in China. That's 17 out of 30 apps analyzed. So if you're looking for a free option that isn't based in China and or won't sell your data, the fine Scandinavian folks in Opera might be the choice for you.
How do we feel? I'm just at this point, I'm trained to not opt,
I have to
feel comfortable
something.
With free VPN. But
isn't Opera owned by a Chinese company now?
I don't know. Are they?
Am I wrong about that? Did I imagine this? China.
Norway-based company Opera Limited.
I did just Google Opera browser owned and Google autofilled by China.
Browser?
So, yes, its owner is Beijing Kunlun Tech Corporated.
Oh!
That is a
plot
twist.
I was afraid I imagined it.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wow.
Bleak says, emphasizes in chat, still based in Norway.
Just because you're based in Norway doesn't mean you're not still owned by China.
Yeah, I mean, so I would say, like, he's right. That I think the model is, like, it's similar to the Volvo situation where, yeah, like, all the things happen in Norway and, you know, but, like, or Sweden in Volvo's case.
According to Wikipedia, the key people in the company are Zhao Yahui, the CEO and chairman, and Zhou Hongi, the director, and then Joachim Kasbaum, the director. So the key senior leadership of Opera are Chinese. So,
I see.
Yeah.
Interesting. Didn't know that going into this story, but then that report. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, you know, take for what it's worth. make up your own mind on this one. It's entirely up to what you feel comfortable with. We won't tell you what to do.
I love a good plot twist.
Yeah, that was a plot twist. I didn't realize that about Opera.
Nothing is free, everyone, including VPN services.
Yep. A couple of emails on the Android Q tip. AJ says, I came across this dessert, Queen of Puddings. I have no idea if it's popular or not, but I haven't heard it mentioned before. Apparently, Queen of Puddings is a thing. Android Queen of Puddings doesn't really roll off the tongue. But apparently, it's a dessert served with custard, and it looks interesting. Maybe it looks yummy. I'm not really sure.
Certainly very British.
Yes. I mean, I feel like at this point, aside from something like quick, the selection will be not from the United States. You know what I mean? It's going to be some sort of worldly choice.
I'm all for quark. Quark should be the name.
Quark, that's a cereal, right? An old cereal, if I remember correctly.
It's like cheese, right?
It wasn't a quark. Oh, I'm thinking of Quist.
You're thinking of Quisp, the 60s cereal. Yeah,
which I've never had.
I still like Quindam.
Quindam, I think. Ari Hamilanian from South Africa. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your last name. Said, here's a suggestion for naming Android Q Quality Street. It's a mix of assorted chocolate-coated sweets made by Nestle in South Africa. So there would be not one, but there would be like 10 little Android people all shaped in different forms of candy. If this was the choice, Android Quality Street also doesn't roll off the tongue, but
and I still don't think they're gonna go. Even though they did Kit Kat and Oreo, I still don't think they go with the actual product again. I don't know why.
But I don't know.
Yeah, this Q question is gonna be. It's gonna be something where it's gonna be like a pun or something that's gonna make us groan.
Yeah,
I wonder if they just ditched the dessert names and like it's Android 10. All right, bye everybody.
Yeah. We wondered that actually as well. If it's just Android 10. And that's it. They move on. Or they just go with Android Q and they're like, well, what would you name it? You know, like, do you have a better name than Android Q? Neither did we. This is what it is right now. Anyways. All right, Ron, you got the next.
All right. So we want to thank our next sponsor. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Capterra. We've all read some surprising online reviews, right? We were just talking about this earlier. When you're going to buy something, you're going to go read the reviews online. So whether you're trying to get a sweet deal on something you're saving for or trying to find the best happy hour in town, it's generally a good idea to read the reviews first. So why should finding the right software for your business be any different? You can read thousands of real software reviews and find the right software for your business at capterra.com/AAA. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With over 800,000 reviews of products from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution fast. Join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for their business. And let me tell you, whenever I'm making a decision that involves spending money, I do research for it. You don't want to buy the wrong product. You don't want to get a product that people have problems with, especially in the software world. One of the biggest things that I look for is how many people are using it and what are they saying about it. And having an easy place to go find that information out is key to making business decisions. And that's why I go to Capterra to always research anything before I pull the trigger on a software package that's going to affect my business. Because if it doesn't work, I need to know before I try to use it, not after months of trying to make it work. And then you leave a negative review and find a new solution. So Capterra saves me all that time. Thank you, Capterra. So check out Capterra's free website. Visit capterra.com/AAA to find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. That's capterra.com/AAA, CAPTERRA.com/AAA. Capterra, software selection simplified. Thanks, Capterra, for keeping us informed and for sponsoring this episode.
Thank you, Capterra. All right, and now it's time for the arena. Yeah.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Last week's episode 412, you went to twit.to/AAApoll412 and voted, and your top vote was Cameron's app, FolderSync.
Wow.
The app that we all figured had must have been in the arena at some point, but obviously had not. So good choice, Cameron. Sometimes those obvious choices are there. You just got to look for them.
Cameron was on last week?
Yeah. Yeah, we had Cameron on last week.
Really sad I missed that.
It was a party. We partied. 39.13% of the votes for Cameron's Folder Sync. Second place was my app, Heidi Hole, at 23.37. The name always makes me laugh. Third place was Calculator Touch. That was Flo's app, 19.57%. And fourth place, Ron, with the OH, or one-handed web browser, 17.93%.
Man, I was by a very small number did I come in last. Yeah, I'm very rusty upon my return. I don't have the chat room in front of me, so Jason, you're going to have to do the standings.
That's right. So let's see here. Do we even have the standings? I'm thinking.
Is Wade County here? Well, I'm in last. I know that.
Wade County is not, it appears. Let me see here. I might have one more way to check this. Give me 1 second. I don't know if it's... I don't think that's the actual numbers here. It says from the wiki current standings, but that's not including tonight's wins. So I think Flo is still ahead. I'm assuming I'm still in second. Ron, you're still in third.
I'm in last.
You're in last.
No, I'm in last. Yeah, I think you and
Flo's in first. Guests in second. I'm in third. You're in last. I have to imagine that's still the way that it is. Yeah. But yeah, no Wade County this week. That's okay. Wade County deserves a day off, just like everyone.
It does. That means I go first again.
All right. So, Ron, you go first. I have your app installed. I will show it off while you talk about it.
All right. So, this is going to be a live demo, my friends. App is called Lightbeam, and it is one of those fun little social apps that lets you, kind of talk to your friends. And what it does when you launch it, it's a very Snapchat-style kind of interface. When you launch it, it's on your front-facing camera, and you swipe to the right, and you can see your friends. And if you swipe to the left, you can see your contacts and that sort of thing. But so, Jason, I'm going to connect with you live, right? So I'm going to say, hey, Jason, right? And you should see that come through.
I see it. I tap it.
Right? It is. Cool.
Hi.
All right, so, bye, right? So now I'm going to cast to you.
Okay.
And I gotta lower my volume.
Yeah, so do I.
But what this lets you do.
That's the Bixby key. Don't launch Bixby. Definitely do not launch Bixby. Okay. Okay, there we go.
So now what that lets you do is we are now talking to each other, which is pretty cool. So it's video chat.
Okay.
But then I can show my screen to Jason. We can do stuff together.
Finally, Ron, we can do stuff together.
Hang on, so I just gotta minimize that. There we go.
Okay.
And so now
there's your screen.
I'm gonna say, hey Jason, let's read Google News together.
Oh, that sounds like a delightful evening.
All right. Or I don't know, let's go to YouTube. Let's go to YouTube TV actually. And let's watch some TV together. And that way, via this app, we can both chat as well as talk about Documentary Now as we watch it together.
Let's watch Shark Tank.
It's such a wonderful evening, Ron.
Yeah. Isn't this cool? So I can type to you and say, ha, ha, ha.
Right. There it is up there and down there, too.
Yeah. Isn't that pretty cool?
And then is this where I go?
And I can also point to things on the screen.
Oh, this is interesting.
This is pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I wish I could draw on your face, though, when your face is on there.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, so it's a way to interact with your friends and share what's going on your phone remotely, so you can watch stuff together. You can what I could see, and I'm going to stop casting from here. We can go back. We can hang up now, Jason.
Bye, Ron.
Bye, Jason.
I
like
you. See
you
later.
Okay. So what I could see this some of the applications I could see this for, if you've ever tried, and you could do it with multiple friends, by the way. You just don't need to do it with two people. You can add multiple people to it. And if you've ever tried to book a vacation together with a bunch of people, it's impossible, right? So, by trading, what about this hotel? What about that? Whatever. So you could get on Lightbeam and you could cast your screen and look at the hotel options, do the trip planning together. Of course, you can watch videos like we said or share music, but you could also play games this is great if you're looking for a free, simple, show your parents how to do something on the phone kind of thing, like a little tech support, IT support option. So Lightbeam, it's free in the Google Play Store. And it's a way to cast what's going on your screen to your friend or a series of people and share on what's going on your phone. So there it is.
That's cool. I like it. Lightbeam, and it is free. All right. Let's see here. David, I have your app installed. Of course I did, because it was almost my app.
It was actually Jason's app. and I proceeded to be illiterate for about 5 minutes, apparently. And then I said it was mine.
It's all good. So, you can have it. I don't want it anyways.
Honestly, yours is better. So The app is Energy Ring for Galaxy S10. So if you have a Galaxy S10 or S10e or eventually an S10 Plus, support is coming. I don't know why it really doesn't work with it right now. I guess because drawing a pill is harder than drawing a circle.
Probably.
I don't know. Anyway, what this does is it basically uses a ring of pixels around your camera cutout circle to make a battery drain indicator. So it only works when the screen is on. It's not an always on display thing, as far as I know. You can pay $250 to unlock some additional customization features and get rid of ads in the app and stuff, I think. And that's honestly all it does. Also, it does have the side effect of making the actual like hardware metal edges of your camera lens much more visible. so there is that. I think that for people who want a persistent battery indicator that's visual, this is way better than the battery icon, obviously. And if you don't like reading percentages because you have a contentious relationship with numbers, this is better, I guess. Honestly, like, people really loved when we posted this app, and I think it's kind of a novel use of the cutout. And it's, you know, it's simple. And there are lots of customizations you can do in the app to make it yours, you know, make it special, make it just for you, in terms of colors and patterns and the way it looks. I don't really got much more than that, honestly. These are hugely popular phones, and this is a way to use the most contentious part of their design to display your battery percentage. And in all honesty, Jason's sub app, which he used because I stole his app, 100%, actually interests me more. On an objective basis.
Don't say that. That's the kind of thing you don't say. That's the thing that you leave in your head and you don't say out loud. I actually think Energy Ring is interesting. Everybody likes to customize their devices. And when you've got something that's as, you either love or you hate the hole punch, this is a way to dress it a little bit.
I was showing my wife the hole punch and the different applications, including this Energy Ring, as well as the screensaver options and things like that. And she just shook her head and said she doesn't understand our world. So,
fair response.
Yeah, fair. I don't expect anything other than that. So,
yeah. So you can see. There it is. Energy Ring battery indicator for Galaxy S10 and E. Maybe someday for the S10 Plus. You have to imagine at some point, the elongated pill shape is going to be possible. But that's the future. This is the present. And right now, it's just circles. Okay. All right. My app is called Health Sync. I looked into this app. I think it was last week when I was talking about the Galaxy Watch Active that I'm wearing and occasionally doing Ouija tricks with. I believe Flo had mentioned on the episode last week that the Samsung universe with the Galaxy Watch Active syncs to Samsung Health. But if you want to sync to Google Fit as one example, it's not the easiest, most straightforward thing to do. So there is an app called Health Sync, which I will show off if my fingerprint works the first time, which it did, yay. That is designed to help facilitate this. So when you set this up, it asks you on the very first screen, like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to go from Samsung Health to Google Fit? Are you trying to go from Google Fit to Samsung Health? Are you trying to go in between Samsung Health and Fitbit app or Polar app? So it has a little bit of flexibility as like which direction and what services you're syncing to. But this is just the idea behind it. You set up the permissions, you tell it the direction that it's going, and you set up all the different ways, things, data points basically, that are coming from your watch that you want to sync over to that service. So for instance, I have steps on the wearable device. I have my heart rate, blood pressure, glucose, weight, water intake, sleep information, and exercises. You set it up, you get sync working, and when I go over to Google Fit, I'll go ahead and tap into there. Some of this data, yes, is pulled from the phone. I actually had to deactivate, I think in settings, I had to deactivate, track activity metrics. Otherwise, it was double counting my steps. It would track it in Samsung and then merge it over, and then it would also track it in Google Fit from the device. So I had to turn that off. But what you end up with is, I'll go into my journal as one example here. Here's a list of like all the activities that have happened recently, and you can see that the heading up at the top there, Health Sync, that information was pulled over from Health Sync. So this was my sleep information that Health Sync actually tracked, and it doesn't pull over all of the information necessarily. Like if I go into the Samsung Health app, you'll see a little bit more granular information as far as what my sleep was like, for instance, how long I was in REM and at what time and that sort of stuff. But it'll sync over data points that it's able to. So, you know, this might work better for something like miles or steps, that sort of stuff. And so you can determine what you want to sync over, and hopefully that kind of fills the gaps a little bit, allows you to still, you know, bring information into Google Fit, which might be your primary. Or maybe you want to go in the other direction and you want to make Samsung Health your primary. You can do that too. Because actually Samsung Health is pretty nice. I've actually enjoyed using it. But you can see, like, if I go into my sleep data, there's a lot more information in here in Samsung Health that wasn't necessarily synced over to Google Fit. But it's one way to sync. It's not perfect, but it is an option. It does have a free version, though that's time limited to the first week. Here, I'll go back over to it. So for the first week, it's free, and then you either have to pay $2.99 or I think it's like 99 cents a month for subscription, which I don't know why you'd do that. Just pay $2.99 and you unlock it permanently, and then it just syncs in the background for you. It's called Health Sync, and it also works on other Samsung watches. It's not just this. And actually, to be honest, it doesn't require a watch. It could just be from any of the information that your Samsung Health app is already collecting, say, from the device. So it's flexible as far as that's concerned. So Health Sync is the name of the app. Go check it out.
I actually think This is a pretty good app because it does solve an issue I've had just historically with all of these health apps. So Fitbit doesn't talk to anything else. Google Fit doesn't talk to anything else. Samsung Health doesn't talk to anything else. Garmin doesn't talk to anything else. All these companies are super into proprietary data that they collect and they don't want to share with anybody. And I think in the fitness tracker space, that is true to it. Like the level of rigidness that companies have about that is way more so than a lot of other, like, you know, kind of personal data collection things. So I think this app is actually pretty cool.
Nice.
That is pretty good. I will plug one app that does talk nicely. My running app that I use, Runtastic, which I think Adidas bought. Mm-hmm. It does have a connect this to Google Fit. So nice. I track all my running data, and then it spits it into Google Fit, which is nice, you know, to have that connectivity. Those are the only fitness apps I use, so I've never run into this problem. But the fact that the other ones don't play nicely is, I think, speaks more to the fitness industry's lack of understanding about what data can do for their users than any sort of nefarious, like, we're going to hold on to our data all the time kind of issue.
Mm.
I think just because fitness companies don't, they're like, well, of course we want to keep this data. They want to come to us and don't realize that if you play nicely, people will still use your app, but then they can do other stuff with their data.
So, yeah, it's true. Yeah. That's true. Awesome. So if you want to vote, which I know that you do, right? It's twit.to/AAApoll413. twit.to/AAApoll413. And you can vote for your favorite app this week. Is it Energy Ring, Light Beam, or Health Sync? Place your vote. We'll check on it next week, although Victor is circling. And speaking of circling, he hits the energy ring. Three-way tie right now, 33.33% for each app in the arena, and this will change over the course of the week. So, you know, we'll do our best this week to advocate, maybe post it on Twitter and get some votes. Who knows? But check it out, twit.to/AAApoll413. And with that, somehow we caught up and became on time. In the middle of the show, we were running long, and now we're totally on time. We did it, everyone. We made it to the end. David, it's always such a pleasure getting you on the show. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your evening to join us on All About Android. We appreciate it.
I'm glad I didn't disrupt it too much.
No, it's always awesome getting your perspective on here, and you fit right in, man. It's just so much fun. And it allows us to possibly title tonight's episode All About Android Police. So, you know, I'm sure your boss will be happy about that. What do you want to tell people? What are you working on right now? Where should people follow your work?
Well, I am indentured servant of AndroidPolice.com, and I suggest you find me there. If not there, you can find me on Twitter, which is my second job, at RDRV3. And that's pretty much it, actually.
RDRV3. Remember that. It'll be easy to remember. It just rolls off the tongue. Thank you again, David. Always fun.
Thank you.
Are you going to be at I.O., by the way?
I am. I am going to be at I.O. You should come on our podcast again. We're going to do one.
All right. But consider it done. I'm already doing your podcast. We'll right now, I'm doing your podcast at this moment.
I will forcibly provide pizza.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds like a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun last year, too, so thank you. And Ron, I think the co-working space worked out pretty well from my perspective. I don't know about you.
Yeah, this is pretty nice. Not too bad. Bandwidth was good. I got to work out some of the kinks. I got to work out this desk is a little low. I'd like to raise it up, but we can work out those kinks. I think this might be a nice solution in my post as I've doubled the number of people in my apartment now. So with the arrival of the twins. So
that's right, man. What else? Crazy. What you got going other than general craziness?
I got a lot going on, actually. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, back in January, I told you about a new little side project that I launched, a hardware startup called Scorbit.
Yeah.
If you go to scorbit.io, we launched our new website this past weekend. We were at the Texas Pinball Festival this past weekend where we were demoing the product and showing things off. And not only did we unveil the new website, but we have actually opened up reservations to order the Scorbitron, which is our piece of hardware. If you click on learn more there, Victor, in the middle of the page, you can see that is the Scorbitron. That is the device that we have created that goes inside a pinball machine. And we are open up for reservations, which means that with just $25, you can reserve your spot in line for the option to buy a Scorbitron. We're still working out the final cost of the device. We're working out the different pieces and how to manufacture them and all that fun stuff. But we've got so much interest in this that we wanted to give people a way to sign up to say that they're interested in it. So, yeah, you could also sign up for our mailing list there, as well as apply for our beta program. But, yeah, Scorbit is it's rolling. It's pretty exciting.
I'm so stoked for you, man. I love watching all these stages of this evolve over the year. And I'm just super proud of you, man.
And let me tell you, the timing of twins arriving in my life at the same time as a hardware startup as while maintaining a 9-to-5 day job and doing a podcast once a week is not has probably attributed to the bags under my eyes.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't give it up for it. It's so much fun. Me and my partners are having a blast doing it. So yeah.
Plans never happen the way you expect them to. Nothing ever goes as planned.
I always say, how do you make God laugh? Make a plan. Yep.
Well, that is amazing, man. Congratulations on that. And can't wait to follow more. That's scorbit.io. Thank you, Ron. And
thank you.
Victor, thank you, as always, for pitching. I'm sorry you didn't have a news bumper, but I'll make it up to you next week.
No problem. I'm looking forward to the crossover thing and how you guys saved the universe. So,
yeah,
because
there you go.
It has to go across both books, right?
Yes, of course, right? Yeah, so I'm wondering how Android Police will help save the universe.
Now, does it have to last 6 months?
Our publisher will talk
though
to your publisher. You know, we'll figure out licensing.
There's a lot to
6 to 8 months, we'll get this all ironed out.
There's a lot to figure out before that the saving of the world is going to happen, but we'll get there, Victor.
Well, some crossovers go like 6 to 8 months, right? Right, Ron?
Yeah. Oh, some crossovers go last a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Victor. Thank you, Alex, for your help. Appreciate it. And you can find me on the Twit Network. This is where I am, twit.tv, doing this show, Tech News Weekly, doing triangulation from time to time. Just go to twit.tv. You can see all the shows, and I'm there. But that is it for this week. Leave us a message, 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us emails at AAA@twit.tv. Find us on Twitter at Android Show. You can find our Arena apps list. That's every app that we've ever covered in the Arena. If you want to go back in time, you can do it. twit.to/Android apps. Show notes and past episodes can always be found at our show place on the web. This is our show page where everything that you need to find is going to be positioned. You've got all of our previous episodes, subscription links for audio, video, podcaster of choice, show notes, contact information, everything that you need is there. Links to the wiki, it's all there. twit.tv/AAA and also the information that some of you live viewers want to know. Tuesdays, 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. That's where we record the show live. And if you have the chat room or if you want to be part of the chat room, you can do that, rc.twit.tv. That is it for this week. We'll see y'all next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.